Rufus Wainwright creates music that is theatrical, witty, and emotional.
A twist like a corkscrew, the swing is rising.
Rufus Wainwright's father is Loudon Wainwright III, his mother, the late folk singer Kate McGarrigle, so it's no surprise that he has a talent for music. In a career spanning more than two decades, Rufus Wainwright has released 7 studio albums. He channeled Judy Garland when he recreated her famous 1961 Carnegie Hall concert.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits, putting on the red.
He has also composed and written an opera and collected a few awards along the way. Rufus Wainwright stopped by our studios to perform for us when he was in Washington, D.C. earlier this week. He's currently on a world tour promoting his latest album, Vibrate, the Best of Rufus Wainwright. With a discography so vast, I asked him how he picked the music for this record.
I actually enlisted the help of a couple of friends of mine. One is my fabulous publicist in London, Barbara Sharon, and also my good friend, musician Neil Tennant from the Pet Shop Boys, with the idea that the CD would be something that someone who knew nothing about my career would be drawn to. So it was stuff that was essentially accessible and that perhaps they'd heard at other places. It's a nice way to kind of bait them.
You're going to sing a couple of songs for us. The first one is Pretty Things. Before you play, what's the song about?
Well, the song is actually about a guy that I had a crush on years ago. You know, it's a nice little love song. Desire. A lot of desire.
What if I like pretty things? Pretty lies. So what if I like pretty lies? From
You have an amazing tenor. It's such a clean, unaffected sound. There can be a kind of a tone of sadness or regret that seems to come without too much effort. Can you talk to me a little bit about how you've developed your voice over the years?
Yeah, I was very much drawn to the stage at an early age. My mother even claims that I started singing harmonies at 6 months, which I highly doubt. The other thing is that at 14 years old, or 13, 14, I developed this real intense passion for opera. And I just ended up listening to opera all the time. I mean, that's pretty tinged with sadness. So I think that's probably where a lot of that longing comes from.
And has this always been your tone, or was there a time when you experimented with trying to sound?
I think my tone's improved. I had the classic experience of having this gorgeous soprano as a very young boy. And then I hit puberty, and it all came crashing down pretty hard. But I still thought I could sing, and I really kind of couldn't. And it's interesting, because when you listen to my first album, I sing very differently than I do now. And it was really actually when you brought up the Judy Garland work that after singing, doing that concert and singing those songs and really concentrating on getting those lyrics across and the sentiment and the acrobatics of it all, that really put my voice into a much better state.
You mentioned your love of opera, and you're writing a second one now. This is kind of an attempt by you to lend your talent to a form that many perceive
yes.
is not thriving. Let's
yeah.
just put it that way.
Yeah.
Can you talk to me a little bit about why you're spending
yeah.
your precious time?
Well, I mean, there's two reasons. One is very personal, because the form itself gave so much to me. I mean, opera really, honestly, I can say, saved my life 3 times. Or at least greatly improved it. You know, once when I was facing drug abuse, you know, it really helped me out. And then also with my mother's death, it was very helpful. And then coming out of the closet when I was very young, because I was around 13, 14 when that happened. So opera has always been there as a kind of support system. So that's sort of the personal reason why I want to do it. But the public one, I think, also is that opera, I think, is one of the last remaining forms and bastions of where it is totally about live, the live music experience. And you go, it's not being thrust upon you with massive speakers. It's very intimate still. And it's demanding, and it's all engrossing, and it's about people making music together. And it's been happening for a 1,000 years almost. So I think it's very, very important, and it must be saved.
One of my favorite songs is one you sing about your disappointment in America. It's called Going to a Town.
Yes.
And I know you have a performance tonight and you want to save your
yes.
voice, but I
yes.
wonder if you'd be willing to sing a little of that song for us.
Yeah, I could do a bit of it. We're in the Capitol.
I'm going to a town that has already been burnt down. I'm going to a place that has already been disgraced. I'm gonna see some folks who have already been let down. I'm so tired of America. I'm gonna make it up for all of the Sunday times. I'm gonna make it up for all of the nursery rhymes that never really seem to want to tell the truth. I'm so tired of you, America. Making my own way home, ain't gonna be alone. I got a life to live in America. I got a life. I really need to to know after soaking the body of Jesus Christ in blood. I'm so tired of America. I really need to know why I may just never see you again. I might as well. You took advantage of a world that loved you well. I'm going to a town that has already been burnt down. I'm so tired of you.
Rufus Wainwright joined me in Studio One. He's currently on a world tour performing music from his latest album, Vibrate, the best of Rufus Wainwright. You can hear more of his performance at nprmusic.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. Scott Simon returns next week.